This is the Sports Haven Podcast, coming to you live from Seattle, Washington, with your host, Jeff Budke. Visit us online at safeplaysports.com.
Welcome to the Sports Haven Podcast. My name is Jeff Budke. In the studio today, I'm here with Trevor White. Trevor, we promoted this podcast a little bit. It is great to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. I think that we got some interesting topics. Going to explore from some different angles, for sure.
Yeah.
And get to the topic on everyone's mind, which is the Olympiad.
Well, yesterday, you and I were in a group meeting for another one of our mini projects. Mm-hmm. And you had drawn a picture of a book, and I thought it was the Olympic Eternal Flame, which goes in your heart for all 4 years. But once every 4 years, you're allowed to really let it go.
You're allowed to let it.
Well, once every two years, I suppose.
Be a flamer, really, in many ways.
The flamer.
Yes.
An arsonist of Olympic love. Mm-hmm. Trevor, what is the most amazing thing you have seen from this Olympics, whether it be one event or one team? I'm just going to start you off with a big question.
That's a great question. I think, for me, obviously, my heart's with the USA. Mm-hmm. I bleed with red, white, and blue. And for me, Missy Franklin has been the story of the Olympics.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone's familiar with her. She's a 17-year-old from Colorado. She's turned down thousands of sponsorship dollars just so she can continue to go to her high school and race at her high school, which is at both respectful and also horrifying for those high school swimmers that have to compete against this Olympian.
Absolutely. And for a person like her, who is only, her window of opportunity very small, mm-hmm. to turn down that kind of money is pretty, mm-hmm. crazy. And what is it, the story that's gotten you, or her performance?
Her sheer class, I think. And she's been a great performer. She's already won, I believe, 3 gold medals in this Olympics.
That's
I
good.
I could be wrong on
that's
that.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I could live with that. And she's got a bronze and a silver to go alongside it. And this is, she's 17 years old. So as a 17-year-old, when you look at it for it with Olympian years and as a swimmer, her real prime is going to be in Rio in 2016. So
absolutely.
This, for her first Olympics, is pretty amazing. She always wears pearl earrings, too, which is a nice touch, I just feel like, you know?
It always looks good. It, mm-hmm. always looks good.
Yeah.
Rio, really, Brazil just lucked out. They got the 2014 World Cup, 2016, mm-hmm. Olympics. They're going to make a lot of money.
It's true. And, you know, you'd hope to see some of those South American athletes actually on the medal stand, because you've seen this in this Olympics. It's been Asian countries, mm-hmm. Eastern European countries, and the United States have been kind of hogging all of the medals.
Do you think that will change in the upcoming events, because track and field hasn't started, soccer's still going? What, do you see that changing, or do you see that continuing?
Well, you know, I'd like to see it change. I'd like there to be more parity in the world for these kind of events.
Maybe someplace like Nigeria.
Right, which, you know, their basketball team is good.
They're underrated.
Yeah, they're a fifth quarter team, really. And so I would like to see, you know, some of the Brazilians or some of the Jamaicans in track. I know they're consistently good there, but, you know, there's not a breadth of talent around the world, which is kind of disappointing at times, because you get a little tired. Sometimes I get a little tired seeing the U.S. win every event, you know,
yeah.
or even like taking medals from like getting a bronze medal when someone from, you know, Eritrea could have won one or something, you know. So it would be nice to see a little more parity there.
Absolutely. It's been pretty cool. I know you're really into this. I was watching a bike race last week, and they're just biking. These people are flying by people's, mm-hmm. homes.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty cool scene in London.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything like that, that you've really just been like, oh, this is a cool place to have an Olympics? Has anything struck you like that?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, a lot of people were worried about what it's going to be like. London, is it going to be interesting enough? After Beijing, which was, you know, unprecedented.
They went all out.
They went all out.
The amount of fireworks.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
And I think that in London, there's so much, you know, so much culture has happened there, so many great things. And seeing things in Greenwich Park, like they have the equestrian there, and they have the rowing, I think, at a special place. I don't really know what it is. But it's cool to see everything built around the Thames as well, like, mm-hmm. and with the arenas and whatnot. So it's a great place to have an Olympics. It'll be cool to see a new I think it's the first time the Olympics have gone to the Southern Hemisphere in 2016 in,
wow.
Rio. But it's going to be, it's been a good Olympics so far.
Well, that'll be fun. Let's get into the topic that I think most people know the most about, the swimming, the, mm-hmm. Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte story.
Right.
We fell in love with Phelps 4 years ago. He is our darling.
Yeah.
We love him ever so much. Ryan Lochte today turns 28. It is his 28th birthday this day. And we're going to slam him here on the Sports Haven podcast. Mm-hmm. Trev, what do you got?
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said about Ryan Lochte. First, that he's a major asshole. Okay. And from there, I would
say...
No,
this is going to be an explicit podcast. Yes. So do not worry about it. I got my Silas Reed rant ready to go. It will be filled with
From beats. There, I'll say that he, you know, is a talented swimmer, but has jumped in over his head and has tried to capitalize on the kind of Michael Phelps phenomenon.
No, no pun intended.
Right. Thinking that he could actually win the same amount of goals that Phelps could in Beijing. It's just not possible. You know, you can't blame the guy for not winning as much as he has, but you blame him for building the hype machine. You also blame him for making custom-made sneakers with his name on the bottom that he wears to swimming events so that he can splash his name.
There was a place. That's pretty rough. There was an interview today with Ryan Lochte that I heard with Mike Florio of ProFootballDoc.com, and he said that Ryan Lochte said he owned 170 pairs of shoes, and he brought 100 of them to London.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nuts.
That's how much you need for what a you know?
Was he there 9 days?
What, yeah, exactly.
We love shoes, but
yeah. And I think the important thing, a great looking glass into Ryan Lochte as a human being, into his soul, is his Twitter account. And so I'll read a few choice selections from there. Just to show you, you know, what I worry about, you know, this guy graduated from the University of Florida. And this is the level.
He actually graduated?
You know, here we go. So this is one that I think he really meant to, you know, commemorate probably the Ben Franklin finding electricity. Can you catch lightning in a bottle and set the water on fire? Something to do with bottled water.
I assume
there,
that's
perhaps
an Olympic reference that maybe his friends understood.
Yes, yeah. For those who are understood, no need to explain. I guess that makes some sense, you know, for those
the
who are...
The silence that is following these tweets, I think, speaks for themselves.
Yeah, I think so. There's one that just says faith, which
any
is great.
Any hashtags or just
no,
faith?
No hashtags, just faith.
Okay. For those unfamiliar with Twitter, you're only limited to 140 characters.
Right.
Maybe he was pressed for time.
The game isn't always fair, but that's the thing, though.
Fang?
Thing,
of course.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Also very important.
Mm-hmm.
Are you solid? If you're not, you crumble. I'm solid. And then one more here for Ryan Lochte. This is my favorite one.
Okay.
Wake up and smell the gardens. You know, some
I wonder if he just doesn't
say,
know the expression.
You know, wake up and smell the roses. But, you know, Ryan Lochte likes to smell the whole garden. And I think another thing that's been interesting in this is his mom. I don't know if you saw the interview with his mom.
I did not.
On the Today Show.
Mm-mm.
They asked him, you know, does Ryan Lochte have a girlfriend? Because he has a marketed amount of sex appeal.
Yes.
And she said, no, he's more of a one-night stand guy.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, my mom doesn't know much about my sexual life.
I'm feeling so much better about my Rob Gronkowski parallel to Ryan Lochte right now. Like, I've thought this for a couple days now. He just has the same look. And just Gronkowski, you saw him at the ESPYs. I don't know if you watched any of that. Guy's a bonehead. I'm just going to say, that's the best word I can come up with it.
He's a total grunt.
It's just, everyone's, you know, used to say, like, Gronk, Gronk, want touchdown. Like, that might be actually what he's thinking.
Yeah.
It's not as much of a joke as it was before.
No, it isn't.
And now Lochte is kind of taking that persona to fill it for football season. That's very nice of him.
Well, and it wasn't that so stupid then with the Super Bowl when they're talking about, oh, will Gronk play? He's got a sprained ankle. The guy has no idea which way's up. His ankle hurts. It doesn't matter. He's still going to go out there and play football. It's the only thing he can do.
He's unaware of most things.
Right.
Including injuries.
But I mean, I'm very excited because we're kind of at the turning point of the Olympics from gymnastics and swimming, which is very exciting stuff, into track and field and more of the team sport tournament play.
Absolutely.
So the beach volleyball, the court volleyball, the basketball, whatever, you know, you'll
see.
You're
going to be
nearing
the finals and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so that's going to be very exciting.
Yes or no answer to finish this segment before we continue. Phelps 2016, yes or no?
No.
You think he's done?
I think he's done.
I agree, but if anyone in the world could take 2 years off and get bored and then come back, I think Phelps is the one.
Mm-hmm.
I would still say no as well if I had to put money on it.
We're looking at, you know, Washington Wizards, Michael Jordan, if he comes back in 2016.
And not a lot of people like that for some reason.
I mean, yeah.
I got to see him in my lifetime. I loved it.
That's beautiful.
He played in Portland. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, This is Trevor White from the Sports Haven Podcast, and USC, the University of Spoiled Children, as I grew up calling it.
The NCAA is full of assholes. I say that with all due respect to the nice people in there, but most of them are dumbasses. I can't take this anymore. The NCAA issued sanctions on USC, what was it, 5 years ago? Three, 4 years ago? When Pete Carroll left.
Right.
And they're finally done with their bowl ban, and they still have a limit on their scholarship opportunities. Recently, Penn State, we all know what they've been through. But from the sports side of it, them not receiving the death penalty put their kids in a bad position, and some of them can transfer without penalty, including running back Silas Reed, one of the best running backs in the Big Ten, despite there being, what, 12, 13 teams in it? Still called the Big Ten. NCAA, great job on that. Silas Reed is now joining USC, who had a sanction. They were allowed, I think the regulation is 85 scholarships. They were put down to 65. Now they have 66 because Silas Reed was able to join their team. The one advantage that all of their teams had over USC was depth this year. I'm frustrated that the NCAA has backed off. They have made themselves the only rule in the sport. USC can now have some depth, take some Penn State players. This obviously doesn't add that much, but when you add a Heisman candidate running back to the best quarterback in the nation, to best receivers in the nation, that makes the Pac-12 way more terrifying for me. I'm from Oregon. I'm frustrated with the NCAA first. Then I'm frustrated as an Oregon fan when the advantage we had over them because of the sanctions they lost was depth. It's gone. And USC is now free to just do as they please. Lane Kiffin hinted he couldn't recruit Silas Reed. He couldn't do anything. He just talked to the media and said, wow, we could really use a running back. Wow, we could really use a running back. You slimy bastard. Just do what you do, coach what you got, and don't cheat the system. NCAA needs to step in and take this opportunity away from USC. Absolutely drives me up the wall. The NCAA is a monopoly. They're the only people that rule. They set the Penn State sections on their own. Isn't this something the law should have been involved with? Ugh. I'm very frustrated with this whole situation. Mm-hmm. To the point where I didn't even let you talk there. Do you have any thoughts on what I just mumbled about and just frustratedly expressed? I
mean, as a you know, ardent USC
hater.
I completely agree with all of this, and I've long felt that their punishment was not severe enough. Mm. In the words of Bane, your punishment must be more severe.
It must be.
And I think that just the NCAA is a major hypocrisy in and of itself. I mean, we could write a, you know, manifesto on that in so many different ways. But with this situation, you're really, you know, you're taking away from Penn State's future, which I understand that's part of what they're trying to do in the punishment. Mm-hmm. But you're giving to another program that's proved to be just as shoddy in different ways. But, yeah. I mean, if we're trying to judge this from a pure violation standpoint, then what is the punishment? There is none.
How does Penn State's violation outdo USC's violation? Mm-hmm. They're really weighing these just not in a good way. No. They're looking at it themselves. They're the only rule.
Yeah.
And they're doing what they want.
And the media is hugely informative of this as well, because the NCAA has gotten such bad press for this,
yeah,
with everything that's happened at Penn State, that they're having to turn things around.
Maybe I'm just upset because the BCS is finally gone. I need someone to be mad at. And the NCAA is just the next logical step. I swear to God, if they increase the NCAA basketball pool to 128, I'm going to just lose my mind.
Yeah, you don't want to be found near Overland Park by any means. That's the headquarters of the NCAA. But I think that it's interesting. The playoff came at a time where really I think the NCAA needed it. They needed to have a playoff for people to feel excited about something to do with this college football season.
Yeah.
Because all spring people have been flooded with these thoughts about Sandusky and Penn State and all of these negative things. And then generally with football, with the NFL and Greg Williams and all this controversy and scandal, the NCAA needed a bailout. And who would have thought that the playoffs would just have been released, that idea that people have been begging for years. Mm. All of a sudden now we have it. And
impeccable timing.
Yeah. And also, has it really received the amount of praise and adulation that you expected it to? Has it received the kind of just absolutely hallelujah, here it is? Or has it been like, well, okay.
What do you think the response has been more, actually? That's a great question. Has it been, we got what we wanted, or, good, that's the first step to an 8-team playoff, a 16-team playoff? I don't know. I remember feeling very good. I just felt like a rush of finally. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, finally, a 4-team playoff. We can enjoy that. It'll be great. The timing on it is wrong, but they can work on that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the response has been?
Well, I know for me, it was kind of anticlimactic.
Really?
Feeling of just kind of like, this is how long it took?
Yeah.
Really? Like, this, and I, you know, I shouldn't be spoiled in this case because college football is still great. I still enjoy it as a fan. But at the same time, you know, it's taken a long time, and it just smells fishy to me, you know? It smells like...
It smells like the NCAA figured out a way to make more money based off what other people want.
And let's distract the, you know, the everyday viewer from this whole nasty sex abuse thing, and let's, you know, playoff, hey, it's okay, it's exciting, 4 teams, get in, BCS. It's just kind of a, you know, it seems like a little bit of a distraction technique.
NCAA, you're shady, you suck. We'll be right back with Movie Talk.
Yes. Hey, this is Trevor White, and this is the Sports Haven Podcast, a special place for people that like to waste time just as much as we do. Welcome back. This is Trevor White at Sports Haven. We're going to transition into the more acclaimed critically and commercially part of the podcast, which is
By the way,
movie
this
talk.
Is brought to you by somebody soon.
Yes, it will be. So today we want to talk about with movies, generally what the summer has been like. I mean, generally it's been a disappointment movie-wise. A lot of the hyped up blockbusters have sunk, have not made money, have been critically panned. You know, you look at Avengers, that's a definite success story. But other than Avengers, Dark Knight Rises has kind of been the obvious cream of the crop for making money and getting the critics to like it.
Yeah.
But with that, we've had a pretty major tragedy to go alongside, which is interesting because the Dark Knight trilogy now has with it two major tragedies tied to it, with Heath Ledger's death and now the Aurora shooting that left 58 wounded and 12 dead. So what I would like to think about today and talk about is, how is this kind of violence affecting us? Is it the movies that are affecting us, or is it our human nature to create violence that we're tying to the movies? And I think a lot of people are thinking about this right now at this moment of time, and should we be saturating ourselves in violent media, or should we be moving more towards hopeful and media that gives us a sense of community and a sense of kind of reconciliation instead? So it's an age-old question. I think it's something that people have talked about since movies have been played. But I think that, you know, it's something that is important to talk about.
I love that. I love movies on reconciliation and hope and passion. Will that sell? It comes down to money. And,
it's true.
And as you talked right there, I felt an overwhelming sense of, yeah, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if I'm going to go see that movie.
Right.
But I'm going to go see Batman.
Right. And, well, and then also, can you look at Batman and say, is that not about reconciliation? Is that not about hope? And I think in many ways it is. But it uses some darkness to it.
Well, I mean, just the Aurora shootings alone, like the man who did the shooting, the crazy, I mean, he's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he had explosives set off in his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone entered in, you know, the place would blow
right.
up. He considered himself, you know, a Joker type.
Right.
He wanted to
ruin. An anarchist in some ways, yeah.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought on by... it was good to see Christopher Nolan come out with a statement. It was good to see Christian Bale in the hospitals. But you're right. Like, what does this mean for the future of movies? Does it affect the future of movie making?
Well, and there's a kind of isolated incident also that happened this year. The movie The Watch came out last week to limited acclaim.
Jonah Hill, Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, those guys. Yeah.
And around the Super Bowl time, they had a trailer that came out, kind of a teaser, where they're driving around a suburban neighborhood, and Jonah Hill, you know, pretends to shoot a young child playing on the street. It's a gag. It's funny. I laughed the first time I saw it, and then we see this movie's called Neighborhood Watch. A week later, Trayvon Martin is gunned down in Miami by a Neighborhood Watch member, and it becomes not as funny anymore.
The the humor is dissipated, obviously, but it seems like it's not like connected. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what you're saying, and I want to make that clear.
Right.
You're not
right.
saying like someone saw that advertisement.
But what I'm saying is the response to that by the studio was to change the name to The Watch and to try to distance it from violence committed by neighborhood watch members towards children. And I think that generally we're realizing that our media vastly, more than we could ever say or understand, affects us. Mm-hmm. And from movies to sports, we are saturated in this, and it's a good thing. It's a great cultural thing to share, but it also we are absorbing it, and we're making meaning of our own lives based on it.
I recently have just felt this overwhelming sense of this advertising pull. I'm a huge football fan. Mm-hmm. I love baseball, basketball, of course, and I was never into soccer that much. It's been a couple years now where I've liked soccer. Mm-hmm. What soccer has that is rare in sports in America is 45 straight minutes of play, followed by commercials and a halftime show, and then 45 minutes of straight play without any advertisements. Mm-hmm. I'm not being bombarded with, you know, half-dressed women selling me vodka or McDonald's pumping stuff into me, which, mm-hmm. you know, they don't need advertisements. But it is kind of a crazy thing how much I think I've enjoyed soccer as much for the soccer as the lack of being sucked in by something. Mm-hmm. And I watch a football game now. Obviously, I haven't recently. But at the last year, I was watching football just like, man, every three plays there seems to be, especially the teams I'm watching, Dolphins, there's a commercial every three plays. And you just feel sucked in.
Yeah. Hmm. There is a sense of that. And I think there's a sense that we are not allowed to be free of our media shackles in many ways. Like, we're not allowed to watch something objectively or subjectively anymore. Instead, we're watching things as if they're the total truth. And I think that's where something like Aurora happens, in that we watch a character like the Joker and we see that is a valid philosophy or that is a valid worldview. I'm going to take that on myself and carry out in the real world what he carried out in a fictional world of a movie. And I think that's the kind of danger that we you know, as any kind of artist you engage in, when you try to produce some kind of art that has kind of dark elements to it. But I think as a viewer, what I would like to say, I think the most important thing for us to take out of this is just to say, you know, we need to be able to watch our media and engage in our media subjectively. We need to be able to watch a football game and realize that, you know, people actually do get hurt and people actually do end up having low quality of life for the rest of their years because of that. Maybe I shouldn't just hoo-ha when someone gets nailed and has a concussion.
The jacked up things are going away. Like
right.
We need to, the less that we love it, mm-hmm. the more likely it is to mm-hmm. you know, simmer down and go away.
Right. And I'm sure, Jeff, you as a coach can even speak to this in some ways, mm-hmm. in that we, you know, as a coach, you're creating kind of the world of the game, the world of the moment for your team. Yeah. And there's a responsibility in that, too, to not be using terminology like, we got to battle at this. We got to fight.
Thinking.
We're not, you know, we're warriors. There's people that consistently use that kind of vernacular around sports, and it's just really inappropriate.
We, last year, I'm a basketball coach. And I don't like using the war analogies. I don't like using the enemy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, I want my guys to, you know, pursue effort and pursue excellence and, mm-hmm. and have a passion. We had a football coach that he comes to all of our games, and we asked him to speak to the team before the game. And he got them all rallied up. Nothing against him. He's a great guy.
Right.
But he was like, look into their eyes and see their fear. And then you need to end them, and you need to stop them right there. And nothing happened. And the intensity in the room, it was obvious. The mm-hmm. kids were enjoying it.
Right.
While I sat in the back with my heart kind of, you know, it hurt. It was not fun to watch.
Yeah.
For me. Because it is a game.
Mm-hmm.
And these are kids.
Yeah.
I don't think some of them might go pro, you know, with my coaching. But unlikely. And it starts then.
Yeah, it really does. And I think we encounter it all around. And I think, you know, generally this is a podcast that focuses on pop culture, on movies, on mm-hmm. sports. It's just a kind of a call to responsibility to be able to say, I can go to a movie and I can enjoy it for what it is and kind of take from it what I will and, you know, see what the filmmaker was trying to do. But I don't have to necessarily adopt that as my worldview. And I can watch a football game and I can enjoy it as a great competition and being able to see two teams trying to really win. But I also don't have to take from it that it's okay to use physical violence to get as a means to an end.
Hmm. Good word. Didn't mean to get so serious on there, but I'm glad we did. Mm-hmm. I really am. But I would like to try and come back. We're going to come back after this with actually a little bit of Batman talk, maybe some other movies.
Yes, for sure.
And an update on Halation, a local amazing project.
Of course. Hey, welcome to the Sports Haven Podcast. This is Trevor White, and I hope you've dried your eyes from that last segment. I know Jeff hasn't still.
Great to have you back. We are going to talk about Batman. If you haven't seen the movie, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You go see the movie. We are going to play a little spoiler here, just so you know. You can fast forward to the end of the podcast, or just turn the thing off.
Spoiler alert.
When I was in the theater, I saw Bane. I'm a big Tom Hardy fan. Mm-hmm. I feel like that may not be like the feeling from everyone, but I like Tom Hardy a lot.
He's incredible.
I thought he was very good.
Yeah.
I thought it was crazy. They went with the Darth Vader mask. Chris Nolan, very creative.
Yes.
Hasn't been happened since Darth Vader. I can't think of a bad guy that isn't straight mocking Darth Vader to have a mask like
right.
that. Right. He sounded a lot like Sean Connery to me.
He had a Cockney accent.
He had it. And I kept losing my mind. Whenever Bane talked, I would say, please say Red October Standing By. Please say Red October Standing By. Do it. And he never did. He never did. So the movie wasn't as good as it could have been for
me.
Right,
it's true.
It would have been. I'm sure there would have been like some sort of infringement or like...
Right.
But who's gonna tell Bane what to do?
Exactly.
So
speak of the devil when he shall arise.
Exactly. Something like that. I'm Sean Connery.
He did a great job, especially because he was acting pretty much only with his eyes. Like he couldn't use
His body was limited with just strapped, and then he was so bulky for this film.
He was.
He was recently in the wrestling movie. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, how is he gonna slim down to play? In the Batman, that he didn't.
No.
He bulked up.
He didn't. He's very physically imposing. And I thought it was so effective, the scene where he is able to actually really physically destroy Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something you hadn't seen in any of the movies before, that Batman could be leveled from a physical level.
Even in the first one with the League of Shadows, when he was being tested over and over, he was never beaten to the point of no return.
It's true.
It did not happen.
No.
One of the things I loved about this movie, and maybe I'll let you go from here, I loved that this really concluded a trilogy,
mm-hmm.
when I don't think people expected it to. I almost wish, if I could go back and change one thing, I would have watched the first one again mm-hmm. before going into it, because it had been a good year.
Yeah.
Did you like that? Did you like the way it went?
Yeah, I think it's so hard to make a trilogy, to mm-hmm. make it all really well. And Christopher Nolan has made one of the greatest trilogies here.
I agree.
And definitely the greatest superhero trilogy. And with it, you see there's a real arc to the storyline, and there's a real arc to his development of the Bruce Wayne character. This is by far Christian Bale's best Batman performance.
His best acting role. Yeah, I agree.
He really just did a great job. There's such a soul to his performance and so much that you saw in it.
Well, Bruce Wayne was 8 years older, so you can only assume
he had to be more mature. He was 8 years older. But he did a great job, and really, in the end, and this is a spoiler, obviously, if you're still listening, you're prepared for this.
You're not listening to us.
I was prepared for Batman to die, emotionally. I was prepared for... And I was glad because he allowed... What Christopher Nolan did was he allowed Bruce Wayne to die. Bruce Wayne is dead at the end of the movie. But this new... What Batman still lives on, because Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to be given the keys to mm-hmm. kind of that vehicle. And Christian Bale is now allowed to... as a pseudo Bruce Wayne, live out a life that he would prefer, where he is not having to be Batman. And he has allowed the symbol of Batman, of justice, of hope, of being of a savior, to still live on.
Hmm.
And so I thought it was pretty powerful.
The last 15 minutes of the film, overwhelming. Just mm-hmm. great emotional like pulls and weights. I was disappointed that when he wasn't dead. I felt in a very emotional tie. Like I remember feeling just, wow, that's how I expected Batman to go. And when I saw Alfred at the grave, mm-hmm. My heart became even more sad. But that sometimes is the price you pay.
Yeah.
I was very happy that Alfred's character was, what's the word? Validated. His mm-hmm. life became validated when Bruce Wayne was alive.
Yeah.
but it took away from Bruce Wayne for me. And you're saying not.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know...
Because he got the best of both worlds there. He got did. To be the savior and live.
Yeah. And he got... I mean, he got to have his cake and eat it, too. But I think... I think it was deserving. I think it worked in the especially in the budding relationship he had with Selina Kyle, Catwoman.
Yeah,
I thought that was incredible. I thought Catwoman called her
Anne Hathaway. I don't know. I didn't know it was Selina Kyle.
So good, she was incredible.
I was terrified of her going into the movie. Yeah. Terrified that Anne Hathaway would. I don't even know. I don't think I've ever seen another Anne Hathaway movie.
Did you not see Princess Diaries?
I don't. Maybe, but I was nervous. I was very nervous. Yeah. She did great.
She did really great.
Absolutely outstanding.
And I was happy to see that moment. That definitely meant something to me. But I think the hard part of this movie, what I will critique it on, is the second act lasted probably about 20 or 30 minutes too long.
Are you talking about like when all the policemen are underground or...
Right. That whole part, Bane taking over the city, this whole kind of interlude. The movie, for me, lost me for about 20 to 30 minutes and then regained me when... We are with Batman. With Bruce Wayne at the jail.
Did you like that?
Yes, that was incredible.
See, that was the scene I thought was a little bit too long, just because Chris Nolan has strayed so far from cliche. Third time's a charm. Yeah. And on the third try, I was like, okay, all right, fine. That's fine. There were some holes that I'm not sure if I am fine with or not. Bruce Wayne goes from getting out of that hole
in Istanbul, or whatever the fuck he was,
to Gotham that is guarded. He's not Batman. All his Batman stuff is in Gotham City.
Right.
He just is there. He just walks up to Anne Hathaway. Also, he knows where she is.
Yeah.
I understand this is a movie about a Batman, and it's not...
Yeah.
But Christopher Nolan is so good at this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would have rather watched the five-hour movie and just figured out how he got back.
Well, part of me does wonder, you know, are we watching this? It's a superhero movie, and I understand. That is a major hole. I'm someone that forgives filmmakers for holes because I think that, you know, if you're producing a larger product, it's not necessarily important to show people how they specifically got there. But I understand. That can be what's hard about it is it can be distracting. It can be like, instead of being in the moment of that scene, it can be, how did he get there?
Why is he there?
You don't want the audience to be thinking that.
Well, another great thing about the movie, and I've been practicing at home, my roommate Clark, and he's been punching my back to fix my spine, like my lower back that sticks out. He punches it every morning, and it's magically fixed. I do some crunches and push-ups so I can beat up Bane. So it's that hole right there, actually, it's true.
Right.
It works really well.
Yeah.
The twist at the end with, what is the woman's name, the actress? She was in Inception, and she's in this movie.
We're talking about,
I'll just add this in later. Yes. It'll be like me, like, awkwardly just saying
her
name.
Marion Cotillard.
Her name is, this is ridiculous.
But she comes back as Liam Neeson, his daughter. His character, Ra's al Ghul. Am I saying that correctly?
Ra's al Ghul.
And I didn't expect that. And that's something in the first two movies I don't think we saw was that twist. That, I need to watch this again moment. Yeah. Where the whole movie, I think about, like, Morgan Freeman is like, hey, she's quite a catch, you know, wink, wink.
Right.
And other people are, like, hinting that she's an important character when I didn't really believe it. I didn't believe she was an important character, and it turned out she was.
Yeah, I really didn't buy that as much, to be honest. I thought it was less important, and it didn't really do much for me, because I thought Bane was the villain, and I think what they're trying to do is kind of subvert his power as a villain at the end there.
Well, Heath Ledger, in the Joker, was fully crazy. His mind was amazing, his planning was amazing, and he was fully scary physically. He could hold his own. I like that they took Bane. It took a different direction that he almost became mindless. Like he was working for her. He loved her, and his devotion to her made him all powerful in other ways. Like, you know, you can't have all 100% on all your categories. He was 100% on strength, and you know, meh. 70%.
It's not Madden. You know,
it's not like Madden. You can't go all 99.
Yeah,
that's and the Joker was. You can't do that two movies in a row.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
I can see that. It just didn't really sit with me as much. Where I couldn't really buy that she was this mastermind all of a sudden, and going from being like a Greenpeace volunteer to being a mastermind.
I guess that is a life that you have to.
Right.
It was a long time built up.
As a character, it just was a little too far of a jump for me. But
I understand.
Generally, it was a great movie.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I think, you know, it was not The Dark Knight. It wasn't trying to be, but it capped off a great trilogy, I would say.
So June for us was Prometheus. July was Batman. Mm-hmm. August, is it going to be the campaign?
Either the campaign or Expendables 2. I can't think of what else it could be.
Expendables 2.
I'm excited about the campaign. I
really thought you were going to go Expendables there.
No. I have no thoughts for Expendables 2. I saw Expendables 1 in theater, and I'm probably going to see Expendables 2 in theater because they're such a fun time.
Chuck Norris is in this one, right?
Chuck Norris is in it. Schwarzenegger's in it. Dude. Come on.
He's back. I can't do it, but he's back.
August 10th, the campaign looks hilarious.
Zach and Will have been promoting it. I see them all the time. Like, they were in Seattle a couple weeks ago. Yeah. They were on Jon Stewart giving him a bad time the other night. Mm-hmm. They're making the rounds.
They are, and it looks, you know, I love watching both of those guys. I love them. And I think that this is a really good fit for them. And really, it's nice to see Will Ferrell going away from kind of
sports comedy.
Some of those things, which I love. I think all those movies are great. You know, he is so great being a self-effacing, overly confident guy. Yeah. And that's what he's doing again here.
Ron Burgundy's coming back. And right. I'm excited. I'm excited for the world.
Because I never thought Will Ferrell was unfunny in this whole process. Hmm. I think every movie he's made has been hilarious. So I'm excited to see him. And Zach Galifianakis is funny in the same kind of way, but he is funny in more of a kind of subversive, you know, idiot playing the idiot role, you know?
Does he, have Zach and Will worked together before in a movie? I actually am blanking right now.
I can't think of one. I'm sure it's happened at some point.
Write us at safelaysports.com and let us know we're wrong.
Yeah.
The chemistry they have.
Marion Cotillard is the name of the girl in
Very Dark good. Rises. I'm going to cut that out. All right. And put it in the other section.
Yeah.
If I remember.
Okay.
Okay, so Zach and Will. I think that's it. I think this is the first one. I'm excited to see their chemistry. I'm excited to see what they can do. The Hangover, the first one.
Brilliant.
It was brilliant. Zach, but you never felt like they had chemistry because that wasn't Zach's job.
No.
I would love to see some chemistry between these guys where they can riff off each other, go off, you know. I'm expecting big things, which
it's
is
great.
Maybe not a great place to be, but
I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it's great because we're beginning the campaign season as a culture here in America, and it's going to be a hilarious start to that.
So. I think that's great. Yeah. Impeccable timing. Impeccable. Good job.
A lot of $3 words we've had in this podcast.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a contest later just so we can go with the biggest words. We're going to end today's show with an update on Halation, a project run by you and a team of like 6-7 guys and girls. You're a very busy man. That's why you haven't been on here. You want to give us an update on what's going on, like what stage of development you're at? Or?
It's been going well. We're in the, you know, right in the filming phase.
Oh, wow.
And we have a weekend of filming ahead of us. And it's been fun. I think a lot of it's turned out very well and turned out to be better than we expected. And I think seeing it begin to kind of come together is very exciting.
Is this a daunting thing that you are now like entrenched in, or is this still something that you're like, I cannot believe this is happening. I love this.
It's a dream. I mean, to be able to make a movie is a dream for sure. And to have a budget and to be able to work with very talented people is all very exciting. So I am really excited about it still. And I mean, I will be kind of throughout this process. So
when do you head in to stare at a computer screen for ages and ages? Well, when did
September.
That begin?
September, and we're looking at October 26th release.
Great.
It's going to be a Friday, the Friday before Halloween, and we're going to be trying to wrap up everything in August.
For the filming?
Yeah, and then editing through September into October. And it's going to be good, especially since our leading actor and actress get married on September 16th, so we really need to finish up this whole filming thing.
Yeah, they gotta get their priorities straight.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Unless they want to have a honeymoon in the editing bay,
you can film that.
Yeah,
that'd be good stuff. Oh dear. So they're acting well together, I assume.
They are, great chemistry there.
Yeah,
Katie Lutzenberg and Luke Klum.
What as far as the cast, working with some friends, obviously there's other people too that you're pulling in. Has that been strange? Has that been hard?
No, it's been a great process because we already know how to communicate with each other. I think in so many ways, and so to be able to make this movie, I think we have a lot of entrenched ways that we are able to work together that we know how to do, and that has really been helpful. And we've worked together on projects before like this, so it's been moving quickly. So,
That's great stuff. Do you have any other parting words? Anything you'd like to say? Shout out to some homies.
You know, always shout out to my Riverside homies. Yeah. Tyler Clary last night won the Olympic gold medal. He's from Riverside, California. And it's really, really blowing up. Also, my high school teammate is playing on the, or played this summer on the summer league roster of the Charlotte Bobcats.
Great place
take
to be.
Take that for what it's worth. Yeah, I hope he makes the team.
I ask you for shout outs. You just name drop. I love it.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. Check us out on safeplacesports.com. Trevor White's going to be joining the show more often, talk some college football, some NFL football. Mm-hmm. I guess NFL football is kind of redundant, but thanks for joining us.
Jet.
Let's talk soon.
Hey, this is Trevor White from Sports Haven, and I hope that you have dried your eyes from that last segment and are able to take us a little more funny.
I'm Sean Kemp, and I approve this message.
Do I sound this annoying on the phone? There's no way.
We're here in the studio. We're going to get some sound checks. Trevor's going to read some of Ryan Lochte's tweets from the Summer Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you're ready.
All right. Everyone is selling dreams until you can buy one. Rocks, paper, scissor. Scissor spelled S-I-C-C-O-R.
He's getting closer.
Yep, he is. All right. To travel is sometimes better than to arrive.
Lochte's a deep guy, it sounds like.
You know, I think he's thought of it.
Can you give me one more of your favorite Ryan Lochte tweets?
Cold weather in France. There goes my tan. No. Hashtag Jeh.
Jeh. How do you think he says it?
Jeh.
I think Jeh. Jeh. Like a J sound?
Yeah. Jeh. Jeh.